From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Monday morning edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Parham, Neil McCready coming to you from the Clark Ford studio today. Raining a little bit in Oxford. Got a brush of bad weather over the night and into the morning. That will not affect the championship game in Atlanta tonight. Georgia and Alabama, 7 o'clock from Mercedes-Benz Stadium. They're in Atlanta, so we'll discuss that a little bit today from a preview standpoint. Also, Ole Miss basketball gets the win over Mississippi State, beating the Bulldogs by 6. A really strong second-half effort from the Rebels as they come back and win that one. They've now won 8 of 9 in the series, 2-1 in the SEC prior to heading to Auburn in the midweek and then facing Florida this weekend at home at the Pavilion. So that's the schedule coming up for Ole Miss men's basketball. They get a win, and so did the Saints. So because of that, we'll talk with Deuce McAllister later today on the show. Deuce now in his second season as the color commentator for WWL and the New Orleans Saints Radio Network.
I listened to a lot of their deal yesterday because I had to go get kids stuff. He is – improved so much as a color analyst from year one to year two.
Yeah, because I mean, the only experience he really had was, I guess, filling in for Hokie during some Cygnus stuff the year before. That was pretty much it. As he is now doing the color, but he'll join us here in a bit to discuss this kind of NFL in general. I mean, obviously a good bit of Saints, but I won't overwhelm you with that topic probably the entire time. An emotional day for me, but we pull through. We made it happen, so it's all good.
That's where I benefit from being just kind of a passive Saints fan.
Uh-huh.
I just enjoyed the game. I cheered for them, and had they lost, I would have been disappointed for a couple minutes. But I don't have a team, so they're sort of kind of my team. I'm following them, but I'm not emotionally invested in it. I realize that when I watch a playoff game, and I'm not living and dying on every play. I'm just kind of watching.
I was really calm pretty much all day. I was confident when I got up yesterday morning. I went and watched about the first 2.5 quarters with some buddies, and everything was good until McCaffrey got loose and scored that touchdown to cut it that time, and then things got overly complicated for my psyche and my mental health. But
Carolina's a good team. I mean, you knew they weren't going to roll over and play dead. I mean, they were going to play hard, and you know, Olsen gave them a huge lift back in the lineup. And
The Saints haven't covered him for 10 years. It's just impossible.
A lot of people haven't covered him for 10 years. He's had a great career, and they're a good team. I mean, their linebackers made some big-time plays. They took the Saints' running game away for the most part, and damn, Drew Brees is special. I mean, he is special. It's just a different deal. I mean, we'll talk about it in a little bit, but he is a joy to watch.
Yeah, so plenty of football coming up on the show today with Deuce and Just Otherwise podcast, brought to you every single day by the Oxford Exxon Highway 6 West in Oxford. Go by and get your lunch specials, get your ribs. They pack them up, have them ready to go, wet or dry, every single day there at the Oxford Exxon. So if you don't want to worry about dinner tonight, they can help you out and take care of it for you. Also, those lunch specials, $4.99, and as you see at the Pavilion, 49-cent bottomless refills with all Blue Sky locations in Mississippi, so take advantage of that. Plenty of locations up and down I-55 in Mississippi, and then locally, obviously, at the Oxford Exxon. Again, coming to you from the Clark Ford studio.
We are Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900 is that number. You can get up today, call Corey, say, hey, Corey, I want a quote on a new Ford F-150 or a new Ford whatever. You ask, you'll get an answer. Not only will you get an answer, you'll get a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. So simple, right to the bottom line. There's no haggling, just great deals, great products, great service after the sale. It's a fantastic way to do your car buying experience. So you get your quote, and it's up to you. You can shop it around, or you can let the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many other listeners of our family of podcasts, and that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. Clark Ford and Amory. And by the way, at the end of your deal, Tell Corey that you heard about the Clark Ford on the podcast. You can mention any of our podcast. $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900.
So, how good is that in bank? We'll start with basketball.
Okay.
I had a couple different things I was going to go to. I was going to criticize something, but we'll have time. I'll get there in a second.
Okay.
I watched a good bit of Ole Miss Mississippi State on Saturday. You obviously saw all of it.
I did.
As poorly as they played first half, frankly, shooting for a good majority of the game, Terrence Davis non-existent again.
See, I would argue that immediately that they did not play poorly.
Really?
I would argue that they played a pretty good basketball game.
Okay.
They just don't make shots. Now, that's part of it, but they had good looks at the basket and missed shots.
Is it the correct thing? Let's ask it this way. Are they running the correct offense for what they can do? Because it looks disjointed from someone who doesn't know basketball.
Yeah, no, and it is a little disjointed at times. Now, that a little bit is their style. They're a guard-oriented team.
Right.
And so when you get open looks, even if it's early in the shot clock, you take them. You take open looks when you have them. When you're a guard-oriented team, you don't necessarily want to run the shot clock down to 5 seconds and then ask someone to go ISO. That's the NBA game, and they don't have any NBA players. You know, an NBA team, like, for example, I was watching the Suns and the Thunder last night. The Suns' offense doesn't make a lot of sense. But what they can do at the end of a shot clock is throw the ball to Devin Booker and go, go. And he's an elite player. Ole Miss doesn't have that player. So, they got open looks. Now, they take a lot of threes, but a lot of teams take lots of threes. Their three-point shooting percentage, I mean, their percentage of shots that are 3 points is about where everybody else is in the country. That's become an analytical thing. You're better off shooting 32% from three than shooting 45% from two. Obviously, when you make a three-pointer, it's another point. I thought they played a pretty good game defensively, and they only committed 7 turnovers, and they forced 14. But they don't make shots. This is where it's complicated. It's the baseball team that has a good approach at the plate, and yet hitting a lot of warning track fly balls. It doesn't show up on the scoreboard. Anyway, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you're fine. I mean, what I was going to kind of get to, though, is a credit in saying all that, was State played really good defensively. State's mm-hmm. a pretty good defensive team, even though I don't know exactly what they are because they haven't played much of anybody. But
well, they have people who can protect at the rim,
right.
And so that gives them an element that a lot of teams don't have. They're really good at the rim, and the Weatherspoons are solid players.
So where I'm going with all this is AK has talked plenty in the past weeks about how his team has not handled adversity, that they seem to fracture when hit with different segments of adversity. And in kind of a microcosm and only a one-game sample, they did handle it Saturday. They were at a spot where that thing could have unraveled and been done. They're down by double digits.
Oh, sure.
With the way State's playing defensively, the way Ole Miss is shooting.
They were down 9 with 8 minutes left.
In my mind, it was kind of over, and suddenly – they didn't quit. They didn't stop. They kind of found the gear and kept going. That's the first time this season I've kind of seen that from them.
I'll be honest. I'd pulled out the schedule. They're down 9 minutes to go. And I'm sitting there looking at their schedule going, you know, if they don't win today, if this thing goes squirrely and they lose by 15, and this team loses whatever confidence it has, given the state of the league, we were sitting there going, what? I mean, I was talking to Antonio Morales. I'm like, 3-15? 4-14? What are we looking at? And Andy gave a great quote the other day. I hate doing this because then people attack me and they attack him. It was a great observation, and he's right. Even the best players in the world, and he's right because I watch the best players in the world night in and night out, when they don't shoot well, when shots don't fall, it's hard to play with the same intensity on the defensive end. The only people in the world that do it well are like LeBron. Chris Paul, people that you would say are top minimum 10 players in the world. James Harden, who's one of the best scorers in the world, when his shots don't fall, he struggles on the defensive end. So what was interesting was Andy talked about how it's the hardest thing in the game to do, and they did it. Shots weren't falling, and instead of sulking, instead of putting your head down, they really turned it up defensively and changed the game. And then at the end of the game, instead of just continuing to take shots, they went downhill. Now, Tyree made some shots that were really hard to make. You can't count on those. That's why I wrote the column that I wrote. And and you can stop me. I don't know that people either read or it's that they don't want to read that. They want to make a swift judgment one way or the other. And I understand that. I mean, I follow an NBA team that is Jekyll and Hyde, and everyone's doing it every one week. The people that cover the Thunder are like, they figured it out. Here they go. And the next week, they're done. And it's the truth is always somewhere in the middle. With this team, here's their deal. They're 2-1 in the league. If they keep playing the way that they're playing right now, this season's not going to end well. But they're doing a couple of things really well consistently now for 3 weeks. They have really ratcheted it up on the defensive side of the ball, defensive end of the floor. They played Georgia well defensively. That's not why they lost to Georgia. They're surviving on the boards, which is the best they can do. And they're not turning it over, which is fairly a hallmark of Andy Kennedy teams. 7 turnovers is a hell of a good number. And they've kind of done that consistently. They won the turnover battle against Georgia.
They're 23rd in the country in lack of offensive turnovers.
Yeah, that's really good. Now, they're going to have to make shots. Guard-oriented teams must make shots. The part of this, and Kennedy can't say it in these words because it's too much pressure on the kid. I'll say it. The optimism for this team in the offseason was built around two things. They thought Dominik Oleničić was going to give them rim protection on the defensive end. And frankly, in the last few games, he's given them a little of it. Not enough, but a little. And they also thought that Terrence Davis was going to make a massive jump and become one of the best players in the league.
Instead, has been regression to this point.
Well, he has the yips.
Yeah.
He has the yips. You can see it, man. He lets a shot go, and he's guiding the ball.
All right. I got two questions on this topic. First, just a simple basketball question that there's probably a good percentage of listeners are somewhere in my camp on understanding basketball, which is not much. So I'm going to ask this because I'm looking at stats here. You talk about, hey, shooting the threes the way to go because you get one more point, percentages, and analytics, okay?
Yeah.
All right. I'm looking at a stat here. It's coming from KenPom. And it is essentially percentage of your points from the different ways you can score.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right. On three-pointers, they score 33% of their points via the three-pointer. That is let me find this, make sure I'm right. Yeah, that is 123rd in the country, okay?
Okay.
They hit their two-pointers at 47%. However, even at 47%, which is much higher than 33%, that's 250th in the country. They're worse at that because they don't have a lot of front court. They don't have a lot of guard play.
That's not a particularly good percentage.
No, not at all. That's what I'm saying. So then they're whatever free throws. They're 19 points a game or 19%. That's 136, whatever.
Okay.
My question being, what is the – is it based off defense? Is it based off something offensively? What is the best way they can look from the standpoint of kicking back out, shoot the three, versus when they've had some success with their guards being able to drive into the lane and create a little more that way?
It's both. You've got to have your guards go downhill, and when defenses collapse on them, you dish to open threes, and you have to make open threes. When people judge the three-point shot, they just go look at the stat. Well, they were 4 for whatever. Yeah, but how many of those were contested? How many good looks did you have? A good look from 3 is a good look. You have to knock it down. Terrence Davis had several really good looks from three, shots that a year ago fell.
Yeah, they're never winning a game with their front court, so you're living or dying with those shots if they're good shots.
Yeah, and Davis had a drive to the basket where he missed a dunk. He missed a dunk. I thought he started the game well. He was downhill. He was attacking, but he missed that dunk, got a little freaky, and then he had a couple of wide-open looks and missed them. The one shot that he made was a out-of-control drive to the basket where the ball bounced around and he got a friendly roll. I don't think that I realize when people say, well, their offense lacks flow. Well, when you don't have a consistent big man who can score, your offense isn't going to have balance. It's like a football team. If you can't run the ball at all and you're just pass happy, well, there's going to be days that your offense looks like trash. As opposed to if you're a balanced team and you can run the football and you can throw the football, well, you're always going to look pretty competent because something's going to work always. That's where they are. They're not a perfect basketball team at all. But here's where when I tell people that when they – because I get the emails from people like you get in baseball with people, why don't you go after Bianco? I get that with basketball. As of right now, look, do I think this season's going to end well? I really don't. But right now, what's left on their schedule is they've played three, they have another 50, 60, at least 17 games left on their schedule. Every single one of those games, Chase, every single one is a top 100 RPI opportunity.
84 is the worst worst KenPom ranking they have left.
This is not the SEC of the last few years when there was a, whether it was a Missouri or a Mississippi State or an Auburn or a Tennessee, where you would play somebody and their RPI was like 165 and a loss was just
now the
crippling.
Now the fan finality of it in their defense is they already have five losses.
Yes.
And it's going to take
12 wins.
12, yeah.
They got to go 12-6, maybe even 11-7, depending on what happens in the rest of the country, and depending on what happens with the game at Texas, which is a.
So where you hit your point that is ultimately valid is it's going to play out one way or the other in the next 3 to 4 weeks, because when you look at the schedule here.
Well, hell, let's take this week.
Well, Auburn and Florida.
Let's take this week.
Okay, Auburn and Florida.
They go to Auburn tomorrow night. Auburn is, you've got KenPom in front of you, a top 30 team.
28. RPI is higher than that. KenPom's at 30, at 28. Okay. RPI is like 9, 11, something like that.
It's a massive. So let's just say for kicks and giggles here that Ole Miss wins the game. Okay?
KenPom giving them a 15% chance of winning said game.
Okay, and I'd probably go along with that. But let's just say that they win the game for the sake of my argument.
Yeah.
Their RPI is going to jump 10, 15 points right there. Then they turn around on Saturday and they get Florida here. And I don't know what – I'd be curious. What is KenPom – I'd say 35% chance?
36.
36% chance.
Florida's 30 in the KenPom rankings.
And Florida's 30, and they're good, but they're not –
they're flawed.
They're not world beaters this year. This is not the team of a year ago. Let's just say for kicks and giggles, Chase, they win them both. What's Florida in the RPI, about 30?
Don't know. Don't have it.
What are they on KenPom?
30.
30. It's two top 50 RPI wins. Bang. Actually, a top 25 and a top 50. Yeah. Bang. And all of a sudden, you're having a different conversation. Now, the flip side of that, because I can hear the people in podcast world, well, they're not going to win those games. Well, if they don't win those games, if they lose those games.
They lose those two just while we have the conversation the other way. You lose both of them, then you got to go to College Station and then go to Fayetteville back-to-back.
Yeah, and the whole thing has a chance to go to hell.
Yeah.
And so when people go, well, it's over. Well, no, it's not over. Now, there's a recipe for over that is laid out. But let's say you were to win one of these two games this week. You go in the next week, two road opportunities to get high RPI road wins. Their RPI is going to be, if they win games, if Ole Miss gets to 11-7, 12-6, do I think they're going to? Not shooting like this. No, I don't. But what if Terrence Davis snaps out of it? Because if Terrence Davis shoots 30-something percent the other day, they beat State comfortably. They figured it out on the defensive end, it appears. Because what cost them early in the season was defense.
Just for the sake of it, Auburn is KenPom is predicting an 88-76 loss to the Tigers tomorrow night, and then predicting a close game, predicting them to lose to Florida 79-76 on Saturday in Oxford. It's not foolproof. Of course not.
No, it's computer programs. Yeah. I always think it's interesting. That's not he's plugging numbers into a computer and running simulations. Auburn may be the hottest team in the country right now. Really playing with an edge, playing an exceptional brand of basketball. They will be a very difficult task, and I'll be curious to see what kind of crowd and stuff they have tomorrow night. I would think that people are starting to get excited.
Let's switch to some football. We will go now to Deuce McAllister on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline. Before we do that, the podcast brought to you by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape, full-service lawn maintenance landscape company serving Oxford, Tupelo, and the surrounding area. Call for a free quote at 662-607-7773 or mastercutslawn.com. That free quote can be looking at your yard, your lawn, giving you a price for weekly, bi-weekly cuts to take care of everything throughout the year. Or maybe it's to build that outdoor living area, that outdoor kitchen you've had your eye on, fence, stone patio, deck, or other space there. Either way, again, the number for that free quote, 662-607-7773.
It's hard to think about Deuce McAllister in an Ole Miss uniform without thinking of Romero Miller as well. Did you know that State Farm has a bank which allows them to do auto financing in addition to auto, home, and life insurance? Recently, State Farm had a rate reduction in their commercial insurance rates. So what you should do is give Romero Miller State Farm a chance to compare your business insurance policies. If you own a rental property, give Romero a shot at that property. You won't be sorry. Go to Google, read Romero Miller State Farm reviews, and then if you have insurance needs in Tennessee or Mississippi, give Romero Miller State Farm a call, 662-893-1212. The podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you're a business with a high-ticket product or service, HVAC, dentist, surgeon, flooring, furniture, etc., Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application. With rates as low as 4.9%, terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580, they will get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben Brown, 443-935-5013. Ben is waiving the setup fee for Oxford Exxon podcast listeners. That's a $500 savings. So call him today. The podcast also brought to you by Gambrell & Associates. Gambrell & Associates have three attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience and more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their website, msbnkr.com, or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. You should know, Superlawyers only selects the top 5% of lawyers in the state, so you know when you get Robert Gambrell & Associates, you are getting a very competent, talented law firm. Gambrell & Associates handles Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando, 662-342-7700, or in Oxford, 662-281-8800.
Now, Deuce McAllister on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline. Deuce, thanks for giving us a few minutes this morning. I know yesterday, as that game was winding down for me, what my mental and emotional state was. You were actually having to work during it, do the broadcast. I'm curious, something that you've been doing for a little while, but first playoff experience, first time kind of with those type of juices flowing. Was it a little different for you in the booth yesterday?
It was definitely different. I mean, the biggest thing, though, you try not to do is make a mistake. I mean, you always want to try to paint the picture so the viewer, even if they're not there, they feel like that they're there. And so just to be able to give them that moment, and obviously they could hear it through the broadcast as far as how loud it was. But for me, you know, it's just trying to have that perfect game. You know, you want to do it as a player, but to have a opportunity to call it as a former player, I mean, I think it was a pretty unique moment for myself.
What was the most difficult adjustment to that? I mean, learning, you know, as a broadcaster, when you're working with someone as established and talented as Henderson, kind of, you know, when is your time to speak? What do you add to it? Specifically, you know, what do you try to give? I mean, how long did it take you to kind of feel comfortable in that role?
Well, I don't know if you're ever comfortable as far as in that role. I mean, working with Jim, he really does a really good job of trying to set me up and just to be able to, okay, here's what happened. Who had the ball? This is the play that developed. And now for me, I want to go a little deeper. I want to be able to tell, okay, it was a 4-3 defense, or, you know, they're bringing pressure off the weak side. This individual is not covering anybody. It looks like it's a blown assignment. To be able to give what the players are actually seeing. And so I've been gone from the game 7 years, but still have a great relationship within the organization, with a few teams, to see what system they run, to have an understanding of what they're trying to do offensively and defensively. So to be able to deliver that to the fans is what I try to do. Now, when you play a team that doesn't like to huddle, you don't get as much, I mean, because they're right up on the ball. And so within those 25 seconds, as far as that play clock is running, from a game management standpoint, to be able to say, hey, look, this is what they're trying to do. They have 2 timeouts. You know, he wants to bleed that clock, so he has to use his timeouts and or even a play design. I mean, sometimes just depending on the situation, hey, look, it's a bear defense. The reason they're playing bear is they want to take away this run, or they're trying to take away this throwing lane. And so those are all things that I try to add to any of our listeners that are listening.
Just kind of curious here, to kind of take me through what you saw on the possession. I saw you quote tweeted me yesterday when I was talking about the fourth down call, and you said they tried to run an H-back option with Kamara. What did you think? Was that something that was set up even on third down? Was he knew the whole time, hey, we're trying to get these 3 yards over 2 downs? Kind of take me through those 2 or 3 minutes and what you saw during that pivotal point.
Actually, I was wrong on that play. I've already went back and looked at that film. It was slant. It was slant flat combo as far as the route combination. And so Kamara looked like he was trying to run an option route, but he was running the slant, and they were trying to get that ball to Mike Thomas. But it was underneath coverage as far as what Carolina ran. And so they had a linebacker right there, or at least it was a safety, I believe, right at the line of scrimmage depth. And what he did, he buzzed underneath. And when he buzzed underneath, that took away right now that slant that Drew wanted to throw. And for him, he was looking to the left. Well, with that coverage, the read is to the flat right now. And so he was looking the opposite side, so they had took it away. And that's why he had to scramble. And so listening to Drew and knowing Drew, he was like, hey, look, man, if I throw it up, maybe my player makes a play. Maybe it's a interception, but they're down the field, or maybe even it's a pass interference. The one thing that he did want to do was obviously take a sack, because they would have got possession right there, and or throw it to where they could have took it all the way back to the house. That's where it would have been detrimental to the Saints in a lot of different ways. So the thinking right there on the fourth down play, it was slant flat combination route, and he wanted to hit Michael Thomas. They buzzed underneath, so they took the slant away. On the previous plays, they wanted to make Carolina use their timeouts, and so you had to run the football to do so. I know a lot of people wanted them to maybe run some play action, some safe play action, but there's no really safe calls when a defense is selling out. I mean, because that defense was taking away every gap that the Saints had. They had an unblocked guy in the hole. I mean, and they were basically saying, hey, look, you're going to run the ball, run the 45 seconds off the clock, and have to make a decision. Now, for the Saints, they tried to run no brain freeze, which is basically a freeze play. And so that was the play that they ran right before the timeout. It's going up to the line. We'll shift. We'll show some motion. And then eventually we'll either let the clock expire or take the timeout. If the clock expires, it's a 5-yard penalty, then you know for sure that they're punt. But when Drew called timeout, you had a pretty good feeling, man, Sean's going for this. You know, not to say that his defense had played bad, but he was in a position to say, hey, look, I'm going to put this on my best player, and that is number 9. If you feel like that you have a play, and Drew did, that he liked, that's what they were going to do. They were fortunate in that situation.
not a lot of running lanes yesterday. Is that something? Because, I mean, I was reading a story yesterday morning where teams have been pretty, during the season, kind of scared to stack the box because of Breeze, and they face some different fronts than necessarily you would expect, considering how well AK and Ingram have run the ball. Is that something, looking ahead a little bit to Minnesota, that will be implemented from what Carolina did, or do they have kind of a different scheme defensively? What should I expect from a defensive standpoint next week?
Well, it was a bare front for the most of the game. The one thing that they did, they walked this safety down in the box, and they put Thomas Davis on the inner line of scrimmage. So they've got an extra guy. They have an unblocked guy. Normally, you're going to re-mic that, and the Saints did for the most part. But they really felt good as far as checking out of a run altogether and just letting Drew say, hey, look, if you're going to play me that way, then my receivers and myself are going to win. And that's what they did. I mean, the Saints had run for right at 150, the most that Carolina had given up in both of those games. They ran for 149 and 148in both of their previous matchups. So Carolina felt, hey, look, we don't think Drew Brees and his receivers can beat us, and we are going to make you do so by the front or the coverage that they played. And that was basically a bare front or a 46 front as far as what they checked to. So by doing that, they had a free hitter in the box. And the Saints at time, you know, they were able to get 3, 4, maybe 5 yards, but it wasn't anything consistent. So the Saints were okay with throwing the football. I mean, they threw for right at, I guess, about 350 yards, and so they were comfortable, and Drew was on. He was able to hit a few different receivers. You know, that offensive pass is where he would go, and he would hit 9 to 10 different receivers. Well, with Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram and Mike Thomas, it's been more of 5 or 6 guys getting involved. And so that's one thing that I knew you were going to have some of those younger guys or other guys step up and make a play. And that's why you were happy that Coleman was able to make some catches. And also another one was Josh Hill. I thought Josh Hill, being a tight end, and that's been a missing piece for that offense, being involved, I thought he did a really good job.
You're obviously going to have some time to analyze this game coming up on Sunday against Minnesota. What are your kind of your early thoughts about that matchup? We were talking about it earlier. It's one of those deals where I know Minnesota's a very talented team, but there's not a lot of playoff experience. It's Case Keenum's first playoff start. It's not Drew Brees's. Chase and I were talking about it. I just if you make me pick one way or the other, even though it's a really good game, Minnesota's at home, I'm going with the team that has the playoff experience and has the superior quarterback, but I want to get your thoughts.
Well, I think field position will be critical, and I think that will be the case for both teams. And what New Orleans can't afford to do is have poor field position early in the game. If they can have positive field position, plus 25, plus 30, then that's going to help them with what they can do offensively. I mean, because when you look at that Minnesota defense, look, man, it's going to rank right up there with Carolina. It's the best in the league. I mean, they have an all-pro Harrison Barnes as far as safety. Harrison Smith at safety. They have one of the top corners and all-pro in corner in Rhodes. And so defensive line, linebackers, I mean, all the way across the board. So for the Saints, it is going to be tough sledding when you talk about it from an offensive standpoint. I look for the Saints to try to spread them out. I look for the Saints to try to make those linebackers, which are good, I look for the Saints to try to make those linebackers have to cover some guys. And so when you talk about that, you're talking about your 2 receiver, your 3 receiver having to make a play. When you go back and you look at that first matchup, both teams are different as all get out. I mean, Mark Ingram, Alvin Kamara, I think those guys had a total of 22 touches. Adrian Peterson was the leading rusher when you go back and look at that first game with 9 carries. So both teams are different. You don't have Cook as quarterback anymore as running back anymore for Minnesota. They don't have Sam Bradford as quarterback. You do have Case Keenum, and he's played really well for him, but the last few weeks he's kind of regressed a little. If I'm the Saints, I show him different looks. I give him different looks, and then I check out of it, or I do send pressure. D-line, obviously Treadwell, obviously Diggs, those are really, really talented receivers. What the Saints can't allow those guys to do is get yak yardage. They can't get yards after the catch. They have to be able to be good tacklers, and I think that's one thing that they're going to know that they could do. But if I'm the Saints, I spread those linebackers out. I make those guys cover. I think that they can cover, but, you know, I don't think it's their strength. And also, it's going to be another game where it's going to be bloody as far as the run game is concerned. It is going to be 3 yards on a cloud of dust, but you have to do it. You have to make them respect the run game.
We've got a lot of Falcons fans listening to the show. What's your early thoughts on Philadelphia and Atlanta and what looks like potentially pretty bad weather up there?
Yeah, for the Falcons, the one thing that they hadn't done really well during the regular season is take care of the football in the red zone. If they take care of the football in the red zone and really make Philly shade coverage to Julio, then those other guys, the other receivers, Sanu, should be able to take advantage of it. I think it's Hopper, the tight end. He's a really good one that can cause some problems for Philly as well. You know, obviously it's all going to depend on the quarterback play for Philly. If they don't get better quarterback play for Philly, then Atlanta, as long as they don't give Philly a short field or easy 7 points via return game, then that's one that Atlanta should win. But I mean, you know that you're going to get safety help with Julio. That's a must. You got to play him like that. And then as far as that running back combination of Coleman and Freeman, both of those guys can be dynamic. You know, it's just getting them the ball in space.
The game's going to be indoors, but you're going to have to deal with some weather up there. You got enough coats and toboggans and hats and stuff for this week?
I will leave the hotel twice. It would be one time to get there from the airport, and the other time will be to go to the stadium. In 1 degree weather and 2 degree weather, I think the wind chill is expected to be -8 in that area. You don't have to worry about me going out and getting a good dinner. they have a couple places up there that I like to go to. They won't see me this weekend.
That's great. You and I talked in July. Just kind of do with Ole Miss for a second. You and I talked in July. At the time, I guess it was right when Matt had been named interim, and you said that you thought realistic 5 or 6 wins for that team. Obviously, we weren't expecting Shea Patterson to get hurt and some different things that happened. But just kind of overall, looking back, how did you how'd you think the season went, and how'd you what kind of job do you think Matt did throughout the fall?
Well, overall, you go back and you look, and man, you just said, man, we missed on that Cal game. You know, that was one that you should have had. You know, you go back and you look at A&M. That was one that you should have had. You know, you go back and you look at Arkansas. That was one that you should have had. I mean, and so there were these moments where it was like you literally had a shot at 8 legitimate wins, maybe 9 wins for a team that was in critical turmoil, and a lot of that was because of the unknown. I mean, and so there was this big relief, I think, from a coach's staff as well as players to finally find out what our penalty will be. And so when you talk about just from a coaching standpoint, you know, it was up and down. Look, Matt has a long way to go to be where I think where you can say he's an elite coach. And when I say that, I mean just it's going to take game situation, you know, situational football, knowing how he wants to prepare his team. What's his philosophy from an offensive and a defensive standpoint? You know, how would he attack the special teams game? Those are all things that I think he's got to get better at. And I think that we saw him improve, I think, and he knows to be able to have a sounding board. He talks about the different coaches, mentors that he talked to. I think that's going to be great. And I look for, from a game management standpoint, for it to be better this upcoming year. And for him to be able to handle that team how he did, to keep them motivated, to keep them focused, and to try to keep it fun when, one, you had 2 things hanging over your head. One, you didn't know what your penalties would be. 2, you could not go to a bowl game. And once those were released, I mean, I know it was devastating for those guys to have to face another year without going to a bowl game, and they're trying to get that overturned. But, you know, if he can get them something to look forward to, then I think that he could, you know, kind of keep the ship moving forward in the right way. And I think that's going to be important. But I mean, it's critical that they recruit well. I mean, I think they've done a pretty good job with the early signing period. And as you look forward to the next year, it's critical that they continue to make those relationships. I mean, Mississippi looks like it's going to have some good prospects as far as elite guys, and you know, you want to keep them at home.
Just kind of curious here. Last thing, really appreciate the time. You talked about bowl stuff there, and it looks like for the most part they've kept the roster intact, or at least not hurt as bad as it could have been given the 2-year bowl ban and potentially the waivers to transfer, only losing a couple guys. For players, how big of a deal is that bowl trip? Because I have a feeling your last year, you didn't have just a fantastic time in freezing temperatures in the state above us.
No, my last year for me, the bowl trip was fun. It was kind of one where, hey, look, man, yes, I know it's not the Sugar Bowl or it's not indoors, but to be able to reward not only the guys that may wear this uniform for the last time and may not play football again, it means something. For me, my sights were set on bigger goals. You know, I knew I had an opportunity to go and play in the NFL, and that's what I wanted to do. So it's fun. It's something that the team enjoys, particularly for your younger guys. I would love for them to continue to look at the rules where they tweak it. So if you have a redshirt player and your team makes a bowl, let those guys be eligible for that bowl game. Let those red shirts be able to play. And so you talk about guys maybe skipping a bowl game because they don't want to potentially get hurt. Well, if you've got an elite running back that is leaving and you have one that's redshirted, it kind of springboards for him to be able to come and play. It's a reward for him. Hey, look, this guy has good grades. He can come out and play. It's a reward for him. And so it gives the fans something to look forward to, but it also gives some of those players something to look forward to, particularly when you get in a numbers crunch. So I understand both ends of it as far as kids wanting to play in bowl games. And I understand kids that, hey, look, man, I don't want to get hurt. You know, I have an opportunity to play in the NFL, and I don't want to get hurt. And so I understand that side as well.
So kind of cool and emotional yesterday for to be able to honor Will Smith, Reggie coming out in the jersey and all that.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I mean, to have the 09 group back, a lot of the guys, think we had over 18 players back, to be able just to be a part of that. And, you know, losing Will a couple of years ago, man, it's still tough on a lot of us. And, you know, you still think about his family and just try to keep his memory alive and let him know and let his family know that, you know, he will always be a part of us and that organization.
Stay as warm as possible. I appreciate it. And safe travels this week. We'll talk to you again.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
Thanks to Deuce for joining us on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline. The Oxford Exxon Podcast brought to you in part by Tyson Drugs. TysonDrugs.com is where you find them on the internet. You can check out their link to order the Sildenafil, $10 version of that $50 or $60 little blue pill that has the same length of effectiveness and helps you get you ready in as little as 15 minutes. TysonDrugs.com, 662-252-2321. Remember, if you're not local, they will deliver to you. TysonDrugs.com.
The podcast also brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. I've used Comer for AC repair. You can take my word for it. Their attention to detail, their customer service, and their work is second to none. Comer is an American Standard dealer, but they work on any maker model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. Visit their website, comerheatingandair.com, or check out their Facebook page. Mention you heard about them on the podcast. You get $20 off. Contact Eric at 662-934-3846 or Shane, 662-832-8749. The podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, you should look no further than Grenada Nissan. It's located just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, Mississippi. They have a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles, fantastic lease deals. Go in, test drive one today. Tell Gene and Sandy Grass you heard about it here on the podcast or at rebelgrove.com. You'll get Rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. We're also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in the Oxford area for the past 4 decades and then some. No one knows the residential and condo market here better than Harry. If you are relocating here, if you're looking to move, if you are looking for a second home, you should get in contact with Harry. It's harryalexander.com, HA at harryalexander.com. And Rebel Nation, 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com and updated often. Be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com.
So your schedule for the divisional round of the NFL playoffs on Saturday at 3:35, Atlanta at Philadelphia from Lincoln Financial. Looks like it's going to be quite cold. Could be some precipitation there as well in Philadelphia. Then Tennessee at New England is the nightcap from Gillette in Foxborough, 7:15 for Titans Patriots. Then on Sunday, Jacksonville at Pittsburgh at noon, and then in the same time slot as this week, the Saints at Minnesota at a 3:40 kick there. So that is your schedule for
the Saints play Sunday.
Correct, Sunday at 3:40.
Okay.
Yeah, Falcons play first, Saints play last.
I mean, we got all week to talk about it. I don't like Philly's chances against the Falcons. The Falcons looked like the real deal Saturday night.
They did. The Rams panicked.
First playoff game.
I still got done with that game going, the Rams are the better team. Falcons won, Rams better team. But
there was no question when you watched that game, if you had dropped somebody in from outer space and said one of these teams has a ton of playoff experience and the other doesn't,
yeah,
it would have taken them, oh, I don't know, half of a quarter to go, oh, that team with the bird on their helmet, they've been here.
I mean, when your kick returner basically almost has three turnovers by himself, that's probably not going to win many games. Farrell Cooper with the Hall of Fame, a Pro Bowl year, but an awful night.
Yeah, it was rough. It was hard to watch.
Saturday, yeah. And, in L.A., kind of panicked a little bit, got away from Gurley, because Atlanta just stacked the box and said, hey, if you're going to run it, you're going to run it on eight of us right here in this front. And L.A. kind of, I think I might have said St. Louis a second ago, L.A. still trying to figure out what to do there, but their window was wide open. They'll be back. Frankly, you might have an L.A.-San Francisco thing brewing in the West here as these years move on a little bit. So
what have you thought, because we'll get to the Patriots. Patriots play Saturday night.
They do.
And they'll beat Tennessee.
They will.
Kudos to Tennessee for that comeback the other day, because I had given up on that game. I was covering Ole Miss and State, and it was post-game, and someone goes, Titans won. I'm like, no, they didn't. It was Jake Thompson. He goes, Titans won. I'm like, no, they didn't. He goes, yeah, they did. I'm looking at it. I'm like, really?
Did you see this stat? I think it was either a halftime or a third quarter lead since whatever the year was. I don't have it in front of me, so if I'm a little wrong, whatever. But playoff NFL teams had blown a 21-3 lead or an 18-point lead, however it was phrased, in the second half four times in a long time, like the modern era or NFL history or whatever. Andy Reid's done it twice. He's two of the four.
See, I can be Buffalo in the offseason where you're like, you know, we made the playoffs. We tried.
Yeah, it's fine.
I'm over it by Tuesday or Wednesday.
Jacksonville, a team that has built that son of a gun the right way. They've hit on drafts. Defensively, they're so fast.
If they had quarterback play.
You know, we say that. He was actually one of the highest-rated quarterbacks in the month of November and kind of toward the end of the season. Now, look, he was not good.
But he doesn't make big plays.
No.
Now, they asked him, just don't screw it up.
Yeah.
And he didn't. But now you have to make plays.
And you still think Pittsburgh's winning that game Sunday.
Yeah. I'll tell you this, though. That defense is something else. And Jalen Ramsey's a bad man.
He's all right.
I was going to ask you, though, this story – is the ESPN story about New England.
Seth Wickersham.
Yeah, just all the drama inside. A lot of egos have been in the same building for a long time.
Yeah.
Tom Brady has his own brand, really. He is his own brand. Sounds like, I mean, if you are to believe that story with any degree of veracity, Bill Belichick was kind of ready to move on from Tom Brady to go to Jimmy Garoppolo. Belichick knew how good Garoppolo was. Brady might have known how good Garoppolo was. Wanted him out of there. Still can't believe they gave that guy away for a second-round pick. Do you put any stock at all into this is a fractured franchise finally?
Well, yes. The level, okay, two different things. It defies logic to me a little bit that Belichick thinks he could have moved on from Brady right then. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
He's still, he's an MVP candidate, for God's sake, who has how many, five rings. I mean, it is what it is. But in saying that, is it a fractured building? No doubt. They've won five rings. This group has had success unrivaled in the modern era. They've just dominated their division for two decades by this point almost.
Maybe unrivaled in any era.
Yeah. But, I mean, especially this era with parity and everything else that goes on.
Yeah.
You have egos that not only are huge, but have grown every single year, a little more. And let's not forget this. We talk about college football coaches, college basketball coaches, college baseball coaches. You hit a point where no matter how much everybody gets along and how much success, it just kind of gets a little sour in some way or another and kind of gets old. They're probably hitting that a little bit too, where it's been a lot of the same people in the same room with the same ideas for a little bit too long.
Gets a little stale.
Yeah. Winning even can be stale.
But the Garoppolo thing is what's interesting. In a league where you know quarterback play is precious, nothing against Tyrod Thomas. Is that his name?
Tyrod Taylor.
Taylor. Who I'm sure is a really nice guy.
Yeah.
And is an adequate NFL quarterback. You give that team an elite quarterback, they're different. You give Jacksonville an elite quarterback, they're different.
Well, that might be the favorite.
You give the Saints an average quarterback, and they're home today.
Yeah.
My point is Garoppolo goes to San Francisco, and they were bad, and suddenly they were good.
They were. They were also completely out of it and played a couple teams that didn't care either.
I know.
There's some nuance.
There is nuance, but they improved dramatically.
Oh, well, no doubt about that.
With him under center.
Yeah.
They went from being an afterthought to next year we will be talking about them in the preseason.
Oh, if you made me take some futures, I'd rather have the 49ers and the Seahawks.
No doubt.
I'd rather have the Rams, but if you had to pick somebody else, I'd rather have the 49ers and the Seahawks.
The team that they will study the most this offseason, they being the Rams, is the 49ers.
Yeah.
So I just question whether it sounds like, if you are to believe Wickersham's story, Belichick made that move because that's what he was told to do, not because that's what he wanted to do.
Well, look, if you think you have your – even if it's not right now, if you think you have your next guy and he's a guy, well, you want to hold on to him because there aren't many of those guys out there.
How old's Brady?
I don't know, 38?
He's older than that, isn't he?
Or I don't know.
So I think he's 40.
Okay, I'll look it up.
I just got to wonder how long you do that. I mean, I know he's in great shape, blah, blah, blah. I get it. It's still a league where you're 40.
Turn 40 in August.
He's 40 years old. He'll be 41 next season when the season begins. You really counting on top of a 41-year-old at quarterback in that league?
Well, that's kind of my point. You could have held on to Garoppolo probably two more years if you could have.
Because it doesn't sound like Garoppolo was
dying to get out.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Just an interesting deal, but – their game against Pittsburgh in the AFC Championship game is going to be a dramatic football game. It's my anticipation.
I think Jacksonville's got a real shot.
Do you really?
Against Philadelphia. I mean, Pittsburgh.
They're good on defense, man.
Yeah, I think they have a legitimate shot.
And then on the other side, I don't like Atlanta. I don't like Philly's chances at all.
It's Atlanta at Minnesota or New Orleans.
And New Orleans New Orleans, Minnesota has a chance to be a phenomenal football game.
The Vikings dominated the Saints in week one. It was week one. Sam Bradford was the quarterback that day, who was excellent that day.
Throw that out.
It was, Lattimore still really green. Kamara wasn't anywhere near in the offense.
Yeah. That game is meaningless for either team.
Minnesota is really good defensively.
Yeah.
Keenum is adequate to a little above adequate.
If you offer me the team with Drew Brees – and then indoors. You offer me the team with Case Keenum.
Yeah.
I'm taking Drew Brees' team. Now, they're at home, and they're that tight end for Minnesota is a stud. They've got athletes everywhere.
Oh, they're good.
I mean, they're very, very good. I'm not belittling them. But I'll take Drew Brees. So you liked the Sean Payton fourth and two. Okay.
Loved it. Okay. Yeah.
I didn't. People have kind of talked me into at least thinking of that maybe I would do it, but
I
like to punt the ball there.
The Panthers literally scored on almost every possession the entire day. Think about it.
They did.
They punted once, twice.
In that league, when the clock can't stop.
Two plays, you're at the 50. We're back in the red zone again. I mean, you have a Hall of Fame quarterback that needs 3 yards in two plays.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I'm the Saints, my identity is offense. If I get Lattimore's good, I get the defense is better. My identity is Drew Brees and my offense. I can expand and I can keep going in the playoffs if I can get 3 yards in two plays. Sign me up.
Yeah. That's
true. I can go into this Vikings game right now and they go, hey, all we're going to do is line up at the 20 and you got to get 3 yards in two plays and that's the game. Okay. Let's go. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. I guess you're right. I understand that line of thinking.
Because it would have been different too if they just needed a field goal, need a touchdown. We had to do a red zone deal here. You had to get.
Oh yeah, sure. You know, they needed a field goal. You have to punt.
Yeah, you punt. Yeah. I guess Peyton's a little psycho, but he's got to be one of the most hated coaches in the league. But it's like it is absolutely that obscure thinking where I was talking to a buddy about this yesterday. If he were a Falcons coach, there would be no one I'd hate more on this planet than Sean Payton. I mean, oh my God, just hate him. But he's my asshole, so it's okay.
It's like when John Lackey pitched for the Cardinals. I hated that son of a bitch. Just hated him. He came over to the Cubs and did all that stuff.
He's all right.
He's all right. Yeah. I mean, I get why people are rubbed the wrong way, but I like.
He's not half bad.
I like his laundry.
Yeah, it's okay. Oh man, but Peyton wearing the little transparent glasses though. He needs some different rims. Needs a little different eyewear.
Yeah, I didn't like the rims.
You didn't?
No.
Didn't like the rims. Oh, gosh. So we'll do it all again next Sunday. It'll be glorious or terrible or whatever it will.
There are few things better than this particular. I talked to Neil Stratton about this on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. This weekend coming up, this is the best weekend of the NFL.
The divisional round weekend.
No doubt. It's awesome.
You get four games and all good teams.
You get four games, eight good teams. Two nights.
Yeah.
It's great. Now, the championship week is great, too, but it's just two games.
It's a little different.
And it's one day.
Yeah.
This is my favorite NFL weekend of the year. Absolutely. Love it. Because you'll get four competitive games. I don't think – the only game that has a chance to be a blowout –
Pats-Titans could get ugly.
It could get ugly. Eagles-Falcons could, but you were talking about the weather, and the weather could be an equalizer in that deal.
Yeah, I mean, Philadelphia is built for that type of environment. So, I mean, we'll see. I don't know. Interesting enough, but they are a different team, certainly, without Carson Wentz. Podcast brought to you in part by Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Settle County, and Chattanooga. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. So you get local underwriting and understand your market. Also, the leader in condo financing in Oxford. So find Jason with the float-down option. It allows you to lock in your current rate. Rates go down before you close, you get that lower rate. JLO, JLOWE at communitymtg.com or 662-234-2704.
The podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB is locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home and all the benefits the big mega banks provide. OUB offers all the technology and products you can want, all with the personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with a live person, all without having to press 10 buttons, without a 5-minute wait. OUB offers its customers the absolute best cash checking account anywhere. It's called Kasasa, and with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000. With Kasasa, ATM fees nationwide are refunded. OUB also offers online bill pay and mobile check deposit using its online app. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured.
All right, what's the score tonight?
I think I said 27-17, Bama. Hope I'm wrong.
You want like Georgia to win?
Yeah, I wrote in 10 thoughts. I've got Bama fatigue. I think a lot of people do. It's not – I won't hate Alabama or all that stuff. I mean, I respect what they've done. It's phenomenal. But I've got Bama fatigue. I mean, seeing a new team win it would be fun. I don't have anything against Georgia. I know a lot of people here do. Kirby's done a really good job. They're a very talented team. I think Alabama's going to take the runaway.
Georgia has the – it's crazy, true freshman. Georgia has the more poised quarterback. If it matters, if I had to say a guy's got to make one throw, I'd rather Fromm throw it than Hurts throw it.
Yeah, I think Hurts is just dangerous with his feet right now.
Which gives them an extra little element like Ryan talked about the other day.
I actually thought Hurts played pretty well against Clemson.
He just didn't screw it up.
Right.
He was okay.
Okay, we'll win the national championship for them.
I think so.
Yeah.
They're banged up.
They are, but they're healthier right now than they've been in a long time.
Lost Jennings.
Yeah.
And Lester Cotton's not playing.
Cotton's out.
Playing.
Yeah. Jennings' loss is big for them because he gave them a real presence off the edge.
If I could have gotten that first line, I would have taken the points. I'd have gotten 6.5 for Georgia, and I'd have taken it.
It's down to 4?
Down to 4 this morning. Falcons -2.5 at Philadelphia. Saints +3.5 at Minnesota.
I would lay the 2.5, and I would take the 3.5 again. I'm getting Drew Brees, and I'm getting points. I'm in. I mean, you could lose that game if you're betting your fortune on the Saints Vikings game. God bless you. You're a nutcase, and if you lose it, you deserve it. But if I've got to bet my fortune one way or the other, I'm going to bet on Drew Brees and get points.
I don't know. We'll see. The last time the Saints and Vikings played in the playoffs, it was a classic. So,
God, it was. Holy cow.
The time before that was not a good memory for myself. The Vikings just crushed the Saints.
But that wasn't a good Saints team.
That was the Saints team that got really lucky against the Rams in the first round.
Yeah.
And then went to Minneapolis and got popped.
Yeah.
It's like 44-8 or something.
This is a really good Saints team.
As much grief as I give him, Mickey Loomis has done a really good job retooling them through the draft and some different things.
Yeah, I'm more apt to give that credit to Peyton, but sure.
Not giving it to the GM.
I have a feeling Peyton had a say.
Think he is the GM these days?
That's my guess.
Yeah. He has a little more football operations authority than is on his contract.
Yeah, I'm skeptical about the whole running an NBA and NFL team at the same time. Deal. I have my doubts. Now, watching the Pelicans play, it does not appear that anybody put that team together, just threw some pieces on the wall.
I figure when Benson has to take a phone call from Peyton, he takes it and listens and might even direct that information back down the line to the management a little bit.
Boy, if they could somehow win 3 more games, they'll rename New Orleans. Call it Breeze Peyton.
Yeah, if somehow they win a Super Bowl this season, they might pay Drew Brees $68 million the next 3 years and no one will care.
No, he would deserve it.
Yeah.
Just give him his money.
It's like, hey, guys, we're going to suck. I don't care.
Yeah.
That's fine. We'll figure it out.
They'll live off that for at least 3 years.
Yeah.
Drew Brees is not the type to walk away. If I were Drew Brees and I won the Super Bowl this year,
you'd hang it up?
I'd have to think about it.
2 rings, Hall of Fame, savior of a city.
Still got my – I'm never going to have to – I mean, this is –
it's irrelevant because, but yes.
But I'm never going to have to buy a meal, ever. I can – if I decide that I need a job, I'll just run for mayor. I'll win. I won't even have to campaign.
Thing is, you're not being funny.
No, I mean –
you can win mayor.
Shit. Like that. He's great, man. I mean, he's fun to watch. And I covered Drew for a while when I was covering the Saints. And
Super Bowl right now. Who is it?
Pittsburgh and the Saints.
Okay.
And damn, that'd be a good game.
I think it's New England and Minnesota. I think Minnesota plays in its home stadium for the Super Bowl. I think the Saints, God, I'm jinxing myself. I think the Saints beat the Falcons if they play them. Yeah. But I think Minnesota beats both of them the rest of the way. My guess. I think Minnesota beats New Orleans and then beats Atlanta.
I just have such a hard time. This isn't fair to Case Keenum. And Case, if you prove me wrong, congratulations.
Well, I mean, he's Trent Dilfer. It's not on him.
But he's got to beat Drew Brees and Matt Ryan.
Yeah.
And Drew Brees and Matt Ryan are better than Case Keenum.
Yeah.
And it's a quarterback
league. To win a Super Bowl, he would potentially have to go through Brees, Ryan, and then Brady or Roethlisberger.
And it's a quarterback league. I don't like that. Yeah. And Minnesota hasn't played a lot of playoff games.
No.
This is going to be new to them.
It's Case Keenum's first playoff game.
And it's not Drew Brees' first playoff game.
No, there's huge discrepancies in every game this week.
And I like the experienced guy. It is my only thing about the Rams all year long, where you'd watch the Rams and go, they're fun, and McVay's cool, and it's fresh.
He's 31 years old, his first game, and it's Goff's first rodeo.
Yeah, and you love Goff, and you like Gurley, and you like that defense and stuff, and you're like, man, they're going to be good for a long time. And then you think to yourself, but I've watched this for a long time, and the odds are they're going to have to suffer some playoff failure. It's that way in the NBA. You see that all the time. A really good young team makes the playoffs, and you're like, man, they're going to be great, and they get crushed.
Yeah,
and they come back and they go, yeah, we learned a lot. It was different. And then the next year, they make a move.
Mm-hmm. So
it's almost always that way.
We'll talk about it as the week goes on. So we will stay with us here. We'll have some reaction to the national championship game and more on tomorrow's show. Also, tomorrow we're talking with Michael Thompson. I've got a thread up on the message board, so leave questions there, and we will knock out as many of those as possible with him tomorrow. So thanks, everybody. Talk to you then.